Here's part three of the May 6th, 2007 Jimmy Dunn podcast.
Bass check, 1, 2. Keys check, 1, 2. Drums check, 1, 2. Make some noise.
Make some noise. Make some noise. Make some noise.
Did you see where Brazil has basically said, screw you to Merck's patents?
I did see that. I thought that, as a matter of fact, I pulled that out. You sent that to me, I believe.
Yes,
and I thought that was fascinating on a couple of different levels because I'm thinking, so what?
Well, it's a great, to me, this is a leak in the dam, in the dam.
Right.
Here's the dam that we have is intellectual property, which to me shouldn't exist. And I could answer 20 questions, no problem. I can prove to you why it shouldn't be there.
You probably, because you could get email on that, I'll tell you right
now. I hope so, because I'll be happy to answer it. To me, and Brazil, they're starting to figure it out. There's a lot of countries out there who don't have intellectual property laws, aren't signed up.
Or they certainly don't enforce them. China is one of those, for instance.
Right.
They had a big hoorah about all the bogus CDs and everything and software. You know, I think somebody mentioned that 70-80% of the software used in China is bootleg.
Right. And to me, that's a wonderful thing. That basically extends the technology of copying into the marketplace. It allows people to use the technology that's now there and take advantage of stuff. And the same thing, what Brazil's done is, they've got.
Let me ask you a question though. What they're basically is ripping off one of these Merck AIDS drugs, right?
Right.
Okay. So the question is, would this drug have ever come to the market in the first place, without some kind of protection for it?
And my answer is yes.
Really?
Yes.
I mean, when you realize that it takes hundreds of millions of dollars investment.
Right. Yep.
To pull it off.
Right.
But the actual pill itself, once you get there,
right,
is, a penny.
Right.
So how do you pay back the $500 million?
Okay, well, first of all, Merck would be let's say they develop this thing, okay? Let's say, first of all, they're going to develop it because people need it, okay? Whether or not there's any monopoly that's granted to them for their pill, people need new drugs. They need new stuff. And so people are going to be out there trying to create new stuff.
Right. So the market says the AIDS people come up and Merck looks out there and sees 100,000 people are going to have AIDS, another couple hundred thousand easy are going to want to be inoculated or whatever you call it, and say, this looks like a market for us.
Right.
And it's going to cost us $500 million probably by the time we get through the testing and everything else to see if this thing's efficacious and so forth and so on. But when we figure the market out there, we've figured out that a quarter of the people, half the people, whatever, will take this pill, and we've done the math and we found out that we need to recover about $10 a pill,
right,
in order for us to go forward.
Right. So let's say they do that and they go for it, they develop the drug and they start to sell it as fast as they can make it for $10 a pill.
Right.
And there's no, let's assume in my world that there's no patent protection for their pill.
Right.
Okay. So other drug companies are going to look around and say, whoa, look at this. They've developed this cool new drug.
Lots of people are using it.
Right. And so let's get into this. Let's rip them off and make our copy and sell it for $5 a pill or $1 a pill or whatever.
Right.
All right. What's going to happen very quickly, first of all, Merck gets the jump on all of them.
Right.
Okay, they get to market, and they get to sell a big chunk of the stuff before anybody can even...
reverse engineer it.
Exactly.
Okay.
Now, then the second thing is this. You got to consider how valuable it is to do the reverse engineering. That is, these drug companies are out there, and their employees are already working. They come to work every day, and they spend their time doing whatever they're doing, producing their other drugs or third drugs or fourth drugs or whatever it is. And they have to decide how much of their resources are worth ripping off Merck's drug. And they're only going to shift production to rip off Merck's drug if the profit margin is high enough.
But I mean, it is. You certainly know, to go back to the DVD analogy, if the band gets together for 3 years and does all the practicing and has all the equipment and all the other stuff that they do and the touring and so forth and so on, and then they come out with this great CD, The simple fact is that a CD costs a nickel to make, but you've got a couple hundred thousand bucks involved in the first one, and the band sells them, and then maybe they don't. Maybe they, by the time they've sold 20 of them, there's already 200,000 of them out there that are ripping them off at a dime.
Well, and there's that assumes a bunch of things. First of all, it assumes that people want to rip them off. With the internet, it would be very easy these days. You publish your song on the internet, people could just copy it and send it worldwide, distribute it worldwide. And then you're thinking, well, like you said, maybe they're not going to recover all their investment costs. Well, that calculation would go into the R&D calculation.
Right. But to go back to your pill thing here, what we're saying is that calculation, they've done the calculation, they say, you know, a lot of people would like this AIDS drug. It'll cure a lot of people and save a lot of lives. But you know, by the time we get it out to market, we're going to get ripped off, and so we're not going to even do the first leg of the investment on this one. We'll go with something a little safer.
Well, then it's not time for that drug to be developed yet.
Well,
the market's not big enough.
That's true.
For them to invest the R&D in it to get.
And I guess what people say, and you've actually hit the nail on the head, and that is to say that. People look and they say, well, you could save, 20,000 lives a year if you had this drug. And you think, well, it's not worth it.
Right. Sometimes it's not.
And we're putting a price. So we put a price on life, as we always do.
Well, you have to. You know,
we always do anyway. And of course you do. Everybody does it whether they know it or not.
Right. And so people are going to write songs because that's what artists do. And people are going to develop drugs because that's what drug companies do.
Right.
And they're going to figure in the ripoff factor into their R&D model. And I would argue now that with the monopoly that they're granted, they waste a lot of money in R&D by projecting out into the far
future. Oh, right. In other words, what they do is they say we have protection for 10 years.
Right.
So we don't have to recover all our money the first year.
Right.
We can recover it. We can, my Excel spreadsheet here, we've done a 10-year projection because we're safe.
Right.
Okay.
And so, and let's say they don't develop the drug. Let's say they spend the $500 million and nothing comes out of it. After $400 million, nothing's come out of it. Then that money would be wasted if they don't actually develop the product. So they want to develop the thing, and they're going to develop it, and they could sell as much of it as they could manufacture and bring to market. And again, you got to figure that the other companies, and we're assuming that there's just an infinite number of employees out there sitting around ready to rip off different stuff. But that's not true.
I mean, well, yes, it is. Look at China. That's an infinite number of people ready to rip you off.
Infinite number.
It's
not. The thing is, it's not infinite, of course. Those people are employed doing something.
Infinite. I'm telling you, infinite number.
Well, here's the deal. What I mean, are they going to rip off Merck or are they going to rip off Pfizer? I mean, you could rip off the Viagra drug right now, too. So how am I going to allocate my employees?
I wish they would. That would be great.
Well, yeah. Well, so, but the point is that then you get the drug distributed to the widest group.
Of course, Viagra is going to be overtaken by that spider we talked about last week.
Yes, that would be great. That would be great. So there's still going to be incentive to develop new things because there will always be incentive to develop new things. People develop new things before there was ever patents, and they develop things.
Well, then there are going to be other things. I think this is funny. They put the copy protection, of course, to try and stem the tide.
Right.
And that helps some, I'm sure, not completely, but I know that I would guess that helps a lot. It's an arms race very often on that sort of thing. But I also look at something like the toy manufacturers. You know, when you come up with a new toy, I don't know about Tickle Me Elmo or something like that. I don't know if there's a patent or anything like that on it. But it doesn't take anybody very long to come out with Tickle Me Bob.
Right. But guess what your kids want? They want the Elmo doll.
Right.
They don't want Bob, even though Bob looks the same, acts the same.
But the only reason that somebody comes out with Tickle Me Bob... Now, this is the difference between, of course, copyright and IP, I suppose, because what would stop somebody coming out with a clone, a Tickle Me Elmo, that's not made by the Tickle Me Elmo people?
Well, that's the difference between trademark and copyright and patents. Copyright and patents fall in the same category of IP. Trademark is just an identification. And that
you can protect.
Right. Because
nobody could come along and call it a Tickle Me Elmo.
Right. Because
R after it or whatever.
Right. So, I mean, if you tried to pass
even though it could be exactly the same thing,
right,
you wouldn't be allowed to call it Tickle Me Elmo.
Right. And the consumers would decide because, as you know, there are products on the market today where you have, let's say, the Rubik's Cube. And then there's a ripoff that's exactly as good.
I know.
But people don't want that. They want the one with the Rubik on.
You're exactly right about that. No, you are 100%. I agree with you.
By the same token, you'd have people wanting the Merck drug because they took the time to develop it. And not really trusting the reverse engineering.
Well, as we've seen, interesting you should mention that, because there was an article, and I don't know if we were going to talk about this, and I can dovetail into that very quickly here. There have been numerous deaths in Central America recently because of Chinese drugs. They've traced the Chinese, you know, the trail or whatever it is, and it had to do something with ethylene glycol. It's cough medicine. That's what it was. It was cough medicine in Guatemala or... Well, did you see that?
Yes, I did.
And this is exactly what happened. Interestingly enough, of course, it was the government that did it. That is to say, the government mixed the cough medicine. It was government cough medicine, but they forgot to check the raw materials. I think it was ethylene glycol instead of whatever it was supposed to be, or something. Whatever the deal was. Anyway, a couple of thousand people died. And some more got sick.
Without IP, brands would become more valuable.
Right, and that is true.
Employees would become more valuable.
That's
because
true.
You'd have to, your employees, you'd want to keep your employees because you wouldn't want them breaking off and starting a new company.
Right.
And ripping you off. And
right.
So you'd have to pay them a percentage.
Right.
And the wealth would be distributed.
And you could backdate the options like they did at Apple.
Backdate them, man.
That's right. That's it. Well, they're not going to get Steve Jobs for that one.
All you have to know is when you turn on your VCR tape, there's an FBI warning that says, if you copy this tape, the FBI is going to get pissed off.
I noticed that on the CD that on the DVD I made the other day, that damn warning came right across onto the DVD.
Man,
I should have started before I made that copy. I should have started later in the tape.
It's hard to believe that the FBI's got nothing better to do but investigate.
What it's like 10 years in jail and $250 million fine or something.
No. So, the copyright protection is $150,000 per violation.
Each time you do the ripoff.
Each time you copy the CD, it's 150 grand, which is just insane.
It reminds me of the when I drive around the country. One of the things, here's the diversion. You know, get the mosquito. As I drive around the country, it's always interesting to look at the throw your trash on the highway. We'll fine you, and in some places it's like $100. I was out in. Palm Desert the other day. It's $1,000 out there fine for throwing trash. I'm thinking, yeah, right. You throw a cigarette butt out the window, that'll be $1,000.
Well, that's like those signs that say speeding.
Speeding fines doubled.
Doubled, right.
Yeah.
Well, why not times 10?
Yeah, you know? Exactly. It is interesting when you realize that if you go through a school zone at like more than 10 miles over the blinking light limit, it's. Here around here, it can be $250 easy.
Oh yeah,
for the fine. $250
fine.
That's amazing. Amazing.
Well, amazing.
Okay, we got that on the AIDS drug thing. There was a couple of these articles that I forgot to print out. And
hey, did you see where Scotland just elected the guy who's for secession?
Yes. Now, is he the prime minister? I guess the prime minister. That's
yeah. He's a minister, sort of a number one minister. Or
okay,
something. Prime
minister of separation.
Yeah, something like that.
But that's because they want to break off again. When I visited Scotland several years ago and heard the story, of course, of the breakoffs early on. They have the Royal Mile in Edinburgh and everything like that. Scotland has a long and varied history of assimilation and breaking away. I guess you know that the Romans, when they came through, stopped up there. That's where they built the wall, Hadrian's Wall or something like that over there.
Yeah.
Because they couldn't whelp up on the Scots.
They're tough.
And they've done it. It's amazing when you think about it. I mean, that's Adam Smith. Thank you so much.
Yep.
David Hume. They've done a lot of...
George Sutherland.
That's exactly right. When you think about it, they have done for a little dorpy country of 3 million or whatever they are, they have now 3 million. But, I mean, when you think of what they've done... historically, I think the steam engine, I think that guy was from Scotland, too. And there was the guy that
Eli Whit. No, that's Cotton Gin.
Yeah. No, the guy that did the steam engine, I think Watson or somebody like that.
Watts.
I don't know. And James Watson. James Watts? Was Watt? Maybe. And the other one, the other big one though, that was Scottish, was the guy that invented the monitor or the Merrimack or whatever, the turret guns or something. During the, he was this, apparently a rogue Scottish inventor, whatever it was. So they want to now break off. Tell the United Kingdom, we don't want to be united with you guys. Or we're going to be our own country.
I love it.
I love it. I think it's great. I love the country. I mean, it's a fabulous place. They're not going to make it, though, are they?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Yeah.
It'd be like too much.
Yeah, like Ireland, you know, good luck on that for 100 years war.
I noticed that here's a little thing. Somebody's concerned about the release of Burmese pythons in the Everglades.
And, really?
Yeah.
Now, you did one of those, didn't you?
Who? What?
What?
Edit. No,
yeah,
okay. No, I loosed Fluffy. In the end of the Everglades,
okay.
As a mere 8-foot python, she was growing at a foot a month at that point.
What was Fluffy eating at that point?
Two large rats a week.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I thought they ate like once a month and then just quit or something. Well, not knowing they're growing that fast though, huh?
Yeah, I mean it gets to once a week. That's about as quick as they eat. It started.
The other thing is that they're lazing around in that damn cage.
That's it. Don't need to eat.
Don't need to eat, yeah.
But so what they want to do is they want to have a snake license.
Really?
Yeah. And it's basically going to be a $100 fee or fine in advance.
Yeah.
and they say it's going to discourage release. Wait a minute.
Say this again now. So here's the deal. The snake license. Oh, you mean to keep one in your house?
Right.
Ah, it's like a dog tag or a pet tag,
right,
or something like that. Okay.
Right.
So you have a $100 license, and I suppose they're going to have the snake inspector be able to come by and break down your door and take a look and make sure your snake's being taken care of. And maybe they have a DCF, Department of, no, DSF, Department of Snake something or another, families.
Snake families. I don't know. I think it'll probably be less administrative than that. It'll just be a fine. It'll just be a fee.
In order to have a snake, if you buy, you go to the, it's like the battery disposal thing or whatever. When you go to the store to buy the snake,
you pay extra.
You pay $100 extra,
right?
And you get you put a little tag on him or something.
The author says it's supposed to discourage people from releasing the snake. I don't know how it's going to discourage people from releasing the snake, though. I mean, the fact is that the reason people release the snake is because of an unplanned event. That is, the snake grows so big, you don't realize how big it's going to get. And then you go, geez, you know, maybe this is a barn animal and I shouldn't have one in my apartment.
Yeah.
And so
when they start draping off the rafters and frightening away your girlfriend and stuff like,
right,
yours isn't that big, honey.
Right. Yeah. And so it's not going to discourage any release.
It's about the money.
Part of the plan. Right.
It's about the money.
And get this. What they want to do is they want the Florida Fish and Wildlife people to establish a list of reptiles of concern.
Okay, now these are not endangered or anything. These,
no,
they're concerned because they might get loose.
Or something.
Okay, so let me ask you this.
You're the snake czar.
Ah, yes, the snake czar. Okay, now so here's the deal. You pay the $100. Now, what do rats cost anyway these days?
They're a couple bucks a piece.
Okay, so you're gonna have some money in this snake other than the $100.
Right.
It's actually not. I wouldn't guess that the $100 would be all that much over the life of your pet snake.
No, well, it costs $100 to buy, you know.
And then you got the cage, and you got the lights,
right,
and then you got to feed it at, you know, a couple of bucks a week or a dollar a week. Or they don't start off at that. They start off lighter than that.
Well, but the little mice are the same price.
So. Okay. So anyway, so by the time this thing's 8 or 10 feet long, you've probably got $1,000, $2,000 in the snake anyway. And you've amortized your $100 over how long? How long do you?
Yeah, I mean,
5 years,
you know.
4 years? How long? How long does it take to... If you buy one at a couple of feet, how long does it take to get to 8 or 10 feet?
A couple of years.
Okay, so you amortize your $100. That's $5 a month or whatever it is for your snake comfort, whatever it is. Now, and now what happens, there are no fewer snakes let go.
Right.
No, here's the deal. They're all going to be let go.
Right.
I mean, it doesn't matter what it is. I guess what they're saying is this will discourage you from actually buying the snake. That's the idea.
Right. It's like a tariff.
Right. Exactly what it is. Okay, that's where it is. On the margin, there'll be somebody that'll say, I'd pay $100 for the snake, but not $200.
Right.
Okay. Well, then that's what it is. It's not exactly rightly named is what it is.
Right.
It's a tariff.
Right.
Not a snake control. Snake license. Yeah, no, it's a tariff.
I just love the idea of reptiles of concern.
Yeah,
like some people are going to get together in a room and go, "Well, are we concerned about this kind of reptile? Are we concerned about turtles? You know, are we concerned about?" I mean, come on, man. It's just so ridiculous.
Well, obviously, they're talking about the reptiles of concern are the snakes that will grow large and be released.
Well, or it could be anything. I mean, these people are going to arbitrarily decide.
Well, one of the things, once they get started, as you know, any bureaucracy always grows.
Right.
And so it's like the snake.
Grant them reptile czar status.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to exert their concern. To me, concern is one of the new buzzwords.
Oh, no question.
Whenever you hear that, I'm concerned, I hear it all the time in court. Well, we're concerned for these children. Well, we're concerned. What that means is that we want to do what we want with these kids, or we want to do what we want with these snakes. We don't want you doing what you want with it.
Right.
Because we're concerned.
Yeah. Oh, well, I love the part of when they stand up at these city meetings here, the commission meetings here locally, and they say, my name's Bob Jones. I'm a concerned citizen.
Right.
Yeah. Well, who isn't? Shut up.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Shut up.
Who's not concerned?
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah, as different from an... I'd like to stand up there when they say, hi, I'm Jimmy Doan, I'm an unconcerned citizen. I don't care. That's why I'm here. Oh, those guys downtown
Let's
there.
Let's see. Did you see that 20 million chickens are being held because...
Yeah, now, I did notice that what I pulled out of that was that I did not realize that the 9 billion chickens are raised each year in the United States.
That's a lot of chickens.
But they got 20 million chickens. They're going to, apparently, they're again, this has to do the feed from China thing.
Yeah, and they don't even know if anything is wrong with the chickens.
They've just decided to hold them hostage on the chance that there's something wrong with these chickens.
Right, right.
And how do they identify these 20 million chickens?
And then they have to
inspect them to let them go. I guess they're obviously going to do a statistical inspection. I mean, they're not going to go peek up out 20 million chicken butts.
I would imagine, yeah. They're going to pluck one out of...
Yeah, statistically, you know, do a statistical analysis to find out if they're sick or going to be sick or...
It's amazing. I don't know how they're going to get to the determination.
Well, they're protecting us. Is this FDA?
Yes.
This, again, brings up so many of the things. These places, as always, once you start any organization, whether it's the cops, FDA, and of course they all have cop status, all of them. Have basically cop
status. Well, and there's people calling for them to have more power. They need to have instant recall power, I saw recently.
Yeah. I'm sitting here sick of myself. I didn't pull it. There was a big deal about that in this week's news, and I have lost it as well. But it had to do with the 20 million chickens. But they are trying to pass a law that basically gives them emperor dictatorial instant powers to come down and close anybody just for a concern.
Right. Whew. Because they're concerned. And, you know, I know 20 million is
well,
statistically not a lot next to 9 billion. I mean, it's
rounding
1,000.
Yeah.
But still, I guarantee you that...
The guy who has that 20 million.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, and that's exactly...
Some people were shut down completely.
Right, exactly. They were. And that's exactly right. I mean, if your chicken farm happens to be a 1 million chicken farm and the guy comes and says you can sell zero of them, it doesn't help to know that... 0.001% of the entire chicken population, as far as you're concerned, it's 100%.
Exactly.
And that's what hurts. No, that's exactly right. Again, these guys, time and time again, you see this with any kind of inspector. I saw this when I was having my addition on the house here built for Grandma. Inspector came by, and actually, if I hadn't been here, he would have not passed it because of some little trivial thing. And I happened to be here when he came by to do the final, give the certificate of occupancy, and he said he was concerned about some particular thing. And I said, well, let's go get the ladder here, and you can go up there and take a look right now while we're here. And he did, and I was nice, and I chatted it up and everything. But the bottom line is, if I hadn't been here and chatted it up with some minor functionary person, we would not have gotten the CO. It would have been at least another week because, you know, then you have to call again, make another appointment. They come out at their leisure when they want to, not when you want to. Hi, we'll be out there next week sometime. Will you be home?
It's all reasonable regulation.
That's reasonable regulation. And as I say, and they have the full function police power of the state. I mean, you know, Lord forbid that you occupy it prior to when the CO is there. And as I say, the two particular things that were there – had nothing to do with whether the place was habitable or not. In fact, one of them wasn't even on the building. It was on a thing leading to the building. I have a little, like a little walkway that leads over there from the house, and that had to do with that. Nothing to do, in other words, if that entire structure had collapsed in a pile of rubble, it wouldn't have made a little beans worth of difference in the CO, in the certificate of occupancy. But if, you know, if I can just see, if I had my 95-year-old mother-in-law in there when he comes by for the third inspection and dialed 911, call the cops and have them haul her out in her wheelchair as occupying the building. I mean, and here's a guy that makes, you know, I don't know, low five figures. I mean, not...
He didn't make no five figures.
Five figures is 30,000.
Oh, yeah. Low.
Yeah, that's what I said. Low five figures. And, I mean, and yet he could pull down, you know, the $57 million sheriff's department on me if he wants to. He didn't, though. That's good. Okay, the other thing one of the other things I had, a couple of things that have happened up in the federal thing that are big news, big deal. Although they're not law yet, and I find this interesting, but they did make the headlines. One was that the House up in Washington, D.C. They want to expand the hate crime law to include a federal law to include gays. And that is, apparently, if you do something against a person, say, and that person turns out to be gay, you are in for double indemnity or something. I'll take, you know, twice the penalty for 200, Bob, you know, kind of thing. I mean, that's, they have no limit on this stuff. And I just, you know, another protected community. Hate crimes have no place in America, no place in a nation where we pledge every morning with liberty and justice for all, said House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. We must act to end hate crimes and save lives. And it's interesting because the... you'll never believe who was a co-sponsor. This is Edward Kennedy. It's Senator Edward Kennedy.
No.
Yeah, it's hard to believe. The president said he, if they do anything like this, they will, he's going to veto it. The legislation was first given life in 1998 after James Byrd Jr., an African-American, was dragged to his death outside of Jasper, Texas, and Matthew Shepard, a gay man, was beaten and left to die. He was tied to a fence in Wyoming. Anyway, they wanted to protect those people, but they're dead. House panel approved. The other thing I'd like this House panel.
To finish on that issue, to me, it's a crime if you're going to beat somebody to death.
Drag them behind. I say this. My guess is this. If you chain somebody to the back of your pickup truck and drag them down the old dirt, bouncy dirt road until they're dead, I'm guessing that's a crime.
Right. And I don't care. Look, I'm all for black people. I'm all for gay people. Fine. Knock yourselves out. Do whatever you want. And you should have all the protection of the laws there. But why? You don't need extra protection. You don't need...
If you're dead anyway. So.
Well, I mean, of course, they're going to protect the other people who haven't been assaulted yet. As if somebody who's going to commit that kind of a crime...
So in other words, here's the deal. The guy kills a gay person or maims him or something like that, and the judge says, well, normally it would be 20 years, but we're giving you 40.
Right.
Because it was a gay person. And that way we've protected, what, the more gay people, I guess, huh?
Well, it's a deterrent. They're hoping that
oh,
somebody...
Oh, the deterrent. Okay.
Right, they're hoping that somebody is going to get ready to beat up the gay person and then say, well, you know, I was going to commit this crime.
I don't mind 20 years.
Right.
But 40?
No way,
too much
man.
For me. No,
yeah.
I'm not no man. No way, man.
So, and I don't know what... Again, this is another instance of what the heck are the federal government doing in this kind of legislation? How does this affect interstate commerce? I mean, where do they get the power to do this kind
of
stuff?
Well, it's all of that, of course, is out of the 14th Amendment. As you know, that is the
equal protection clause.
That's where it all comes
from.
There's
a clause in there which says that they can create legislation to...
Right, and that's the open door policy. We can create legislation. And, of course, interestingly enough, for, gosh, I guess 70 years after the 14th Amendment was passed, or 60 years at least, nobody ever gave
nobody
it a thought.
Nobody batted an eye.
Nobody batted an eye, and it wasn't until on a state level. And it wasn't until the Warren Court that they really started to incorporate the 14th Amendment into the state laws. And just little by little by little, and actually in what they call landmark decisions, but they did it and they got them all in.
My thought is this. How is that equal protection? I mean, what they're talking about is unequal protection.
Right,
they want extra protection.
Yeah, right, exactly. Well, if you're not gay, the guy gets away with it. I'm sorry, you're not gay? Oh, no, he's only going to jail for a little while. You don't need any protection.
Right.
Yeah, no. It's the gay person that needs the extra. No, you're exactly correct. You're looking at it the wrong way. It's backwards. You are unprotecting, if you want to call it that. That's great. Okay, what's next? Anything? I did notice that I didn't realize this. House panel approves $48 billion for spy agencies. $48 billion we spend.
That's like World War II cost or something.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Well, not only that, I love this part that they call it, it's for military intelligence, which, as anybody will tell you, is an oxymoron. I mean, I love that they call this the intelligence agency. The House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence has authorized U.S. intelligence agency. How many times can you use the word intelligence on something that's not intelligent? To spend an estimated $48 billion in 2008, the largest amount ever included in an intelligence bill, thanks to an inclusion of funding efforts associated with the war in Iraq and Afghanistan. This one paragraph has the word intelligence one, two, three times, I guess, in three sentences, in three lines. Anyway, I didn't realize that, number one, that we were spending $48 billion, but you realize that that's all secret stuff. That's money. I'm surprised they even got the money out. And, of course, as you know, I think somebody was telling me one time that a lot of the CIA money is, like, you don't even know, don't even want to know. It's like in...
NSA money.
NSA money. Well, it's like in...
Agencies have expanded times 10 since the 60s. They've just ballooned.
Because there's really not much oversight. I mean, you know, sometimes you'll see them testify in closed door sessions, and the oversight committee can say, "Well, hell, we didn't know that." It reminds me of Independence Day when they flew the president to see the alien, and he says, "Where'd you get the money for this?" Oh, I forgot what they said, but basically, did you see that? That thing was billions of dollars where they were keeping the spaceship and the alien and everything like that, and the president had no clue. And nobody knew somebody knew where the money came from, but I thought it was some functionary that told the president, "Oh, by the way, now that we're being attacked, let me just give you a clue. We have for 50 years, you know, Area 51. Oh my God. So, you know, you wonder on a need to know basis, and it turns out that nobody needs to know.
Yep.
So we're all under spying, and that's the net that is tightening. Anyway, that's about all I've got of any particular note today. We've probably chatted our brains out on this thing here. The only other things I did notice that I forgot to print out the whole thing was, did I talk about Illinois and Illinois wanting more money for health care, or New York wanting more money for schools? Turns out that in Illinois, Rod Blagojevich, or whatever, second-term Democrat, has decided months ago to push a new health care initiative, and he wants to offer, we've talked about this before, on Maine, I think, two other states that wanted to, and Massachusetts, I think, would not offer not only insurance for everyone in Illinois, but also wellness training, special attention to chronic disease, and streamline administration. Unlike efforts in other states, the plan would not simply shift or borrow money from existing programs, but will be largely financed by a brand new tax on gross business receipts. And I thought this also has, it is amazing to me, there ought to be a seal on the government that says it's never enough. It doesn't matter how much money they have, it's never enough. This health plan, it's going to be a brand new tax. In New York, they're seeking higher taxes despite all the extra aid. And just weeks after the New York legislature budgeted a record $900 million in new aid for the state's 671 school districts that are not part of the cities, the districts have responded with plans to raise another $691 million more in new taxes. I mean, the point is, it's never enough. And I guarantee you that the New York schools won't be any better, and that health care in Illinois will not be any better with all this extra money. Guaranteed.
There was a headline last week in the Orlando Sentinel that said reading scores dropped. Educators baffled.
Really?
Yeah. There was a half a dozen counties or more where the scores had dropped by 6-7%, and people, they didn't know what the problem was. And of course, I know what the problem was. They didn't have enough money.
Right.
You know, if they just had a little more money, those scores would be going up.
Right. Well, here locally, they broke out the champagne, corks a popping. They had caviar the whole nine yards because one of the grade levels here raised their scores. From, I think the, let me just think now, how does the FCAT work? It works from, it's 1 to 500, and the average is 300. And I think it's spread out the same way that the SATs are. That is, it's a bell-shaped curve, and that as you go, that almost everybody is from like 250 to 350 or something like that. If you're down in the 100s, you're in the, you know, third standard deviation out or something. And if you have a 450 or 475 score, you're in the, you know, 99th percentile. But almost everybody, the vast majority, are centered around 300. Well, they raised the score here from 303 to 304. Champagne. The headline was scores rise or something like, you know, cheers all around. I mean, it was awards. I mean, go down to the plaque manufacturer. We need to get some new plaques.
Here's another quick one. Senate approves rules on pet food labeling. It's nice to know that our United States senators have nothing better to do.
This is another thing. What is federal? I mean, as I mentioned, I think in the opening segment here, before we got started on the first segment, is it because seniors are restricted to eating pet food, dog food, or whatever because of the low Social Security payments, which nobody wants to talk about, or what? I mean, I think that somebody said when you read that story. I think that they found out that 1,000 or 2,000 animals got sick and 35 died that they know, but they don't know about the others. They want to do research to find out how many more are with the tainted pet food. But they now, I guess, now think about it for a second. When you look at the label on the food today, I guess they're going to have a nutrition label they're not going to count on Purina.
Well, they've already got a nutrition label on a lot of dog food. I know
this,
that.
But that's voluntary, I'll bet you.
Probably so.
But like, it's not voluntary. You know, on if you go and buy Fig Newtons or a candy bar.
Right, it's got to be.
It's got to be. I mean, and boy, and God save you if it's wrong. Whoa. And I don't know if they've tried, but they don't have nutrition labels yet on the fresh fruits, do they? And vegetables. In other words, when you go buy a head of lettuce, you don't have to have a nutrition label on it.
Right, right.
Okay. I wonder how long that's going to be. Which reminds me, my garden is coming along. I'm gonna have tons of tomatoes this year.
All right.
I hope if the rabbits don't get it. So I'm just curious to know about this pet food. Does that mean that there's gonna be a mandatory label on there that says no poisons involved in making of this pet food? Or
I guess I mean.
But a federal law on pet food labeling. Can you imagine? We don't trust the Purina people or the dog chow people or whoever it is. We have to have a federal law. I mean, who gets arrested on that? And they have no more inspectors. I guess they're going to have inspectors in the dog food plant. And
everybody's just got the bit in their mouth about regulation and oversight and inspection and licensing. And it's just everywhere. I mean, now here we are. They're passing a federal law. Our U.S. senators are involved in our dog food. I mean,
exactly. Exactly. I think I'm about done with this show.
Yeah, me too.
We have to get some of this cut out of here.
Definitely. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. And we'll no doubt the rest of the crowd maybe will show up on the next show. But we did want to get something out for the loyal troops and get our count up at the website or whatever. And which reminds me, we did have a bunch of people that signed up for the Feed Blitz thing or whatever it was. And that's the fastest way to get this show. So this is a two-man show this time. It'd be kind of interesting.
Yeah.
And good luck on editing this one out.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, DJ Laura,
whoever gets
takes
to do
this
it.
One on.
Yeah.
And thanks for listening, everybody. Email us if you like, jimmy@jimmydone.com.
No, mostly Counselor Curtis, I think.
At jimmydone.com.
That's right, yeah. Jimmy doesn't want to hear about this show.
Okay.
No, we did fine. We did fine. We did a great job.
Thanks a lot, and we'll see you next time.
Yep. You going to play the song now?
I can't find it.
It's right there in the beginning. Play the beginning one.
Thank you for listening to part 3 of the May 6th, 2007 Jimmy Dunn podcast.
Shadows grown so long before my eyes, and then moving across the page. Suddenly the day turns into night, far away from the city. Don't hesitate. Don't
Remember, tell your friends about the Jimmy Dome Show.